And welcome back. Republican presidential contenders have held two national debates. Democrats are about to hold their first. As the campaign continues, a future debate will be held at Washington University, where five presidential and vice presidential debates have been held since 1992. Debates are considered campaign highlights and important for candidates. But do they really matter? We'll talk about that and about the importance to the cities and venues in which they're held in this segment. With me in studio is Ken Warren, professor of political science at St. Louis University. Joining us by long line is Mitchell McKinney, professor and chair for political communication at the University of Missouri in Columbia. He joins us from there. He has served as a consultant to C-SPAN and the U.S. Commission on Presidential Debates. Mitchell and Ken, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Good afternoon.
Mitchell, let me begin with you, and just with a very basic question that we raise in this segment is, do presidential debates really matter?
Well, Don, you referenced the primary debate that will be happening next week. What we have found in our research is that certainly in a primary season, we say that debates matter even more in terms of helping folks make up their mind. Individuals will then be committed to a candidate after seeing them in debate. By the time we get to the fall election, a general election in October, just weeks before the general election, after this campaign has been going on really for years, we find very little movement. Now, you know, having said that, our research since the early 90s in terms of the effects of debates show that anywhere from 2 to 3% of debate watchers will come into that debate uncommitted and then will commit to a candidate. There's some evidence that if one is going to watch a debate, they're also more likely to participate.
Mitchell, excuse me. Apparently, we're having some problem, and I'll ask you to stand by for just a second. We'll pick up on that point when we come back. I'll turn to Ken Warren. What do you think, Ken? You in line with Mitchell?
Absolutely. In fact, I have his article here in front of me, where it's a very good article that reviews presidential debates for, you know, since 2000. In the early days, we used to think that presidential debates didn't matter because the focus was on a general election presidential debates. And, you know, I think it's just intuitive that presidential debates don't change the minds of people too much because most people are partisans and most people have already decided who they're going to vote for. And as in this McKinney's article, he points out that 87% of people have already made up their minds when they're watching presidential debates, and it gets even fewer as you get into the later debates in October. But in primaries, the debates matter a lot.
It's a winnowing process during the primaries. At least it is this time around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question. You take someone like Fiorina. You know, she was way down in the polls. Now, as a result of the debates, and there can be other reasons, mostly political analysis of how she did in these debates, that can make a big difference. So sometimes it's hard to figure out whether the debate really made the difference or the analysis by political pundits on how she did. But you know, you saw people rise and fall in these primaries.
Yeah. Let me get back. We have Mitchell back with us now. Whatever that problem was has been resolved. And Mitchell, sorry for that, but pick up on the point you were making with regard to the distinction between primary debates and the presidential debates.
Well, as Ken noted, we have found in those general election debates that a much smaller number will be swayed or influenced by the debate because largely those partisans are tuning in to cheer on their candidate. Yet having said that, we've had a number of national elections, presidential elections, that have been decided by a very small margin. And so even if we see that, say, 2 to 3% of those debate viewers come in as uncommitted and then commit to a candidate, that small margin can have a difference in a general election debate. And I think that it's also important that the function of those debates to energize or to motivate the partisans to turn them out in the next 3 to 4 weeks after that debate. That's also an important, I think, effect of those debates. So, you know, with all of those caveats, when we say that general election debates really change few minds, I think they still do some important work.
You know, I think the big debate, the one that everyone talks about, and I guess it was really the first one, certainly the first televised, is the Kennedy-Nixon debate. And that was a very, very close election. Ken, I'll turn to you for this. But the general consensus is that Kennedy won on television, Nixon won on the radio. I guess it just proves that television came of age and that's the more impressive and influential media.
There are conflicting studies on whether or not the Kennedy and Nixon debates really made a difference. So, I mean, there are some polls that show that Kennedy was slightly ahead of Nixon before the debates, and he was slightly ahead of Nixon after the debates. Certainly, it could have made a difference. It could have made, you know, it could have nudged enough undecideds to allow Kennedy to win. Kennedy won by 0.2%, by the way, about 100,000 votes.
Thank you,
votes.
Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Nelson Polsby, in a review of that debate, came out and concluded that the debates did not make any difference in 1960. But there are others who think that it made a little difference in favor of Kennedy.
Mitchell McKinney, what do you think about that one?
Well, I do think that we have a few instances of where 60 maybe one, where, again, if we're working at the margins and we're nudging folks and we end up having a very close election, there's some evidence that debates, we could say, then made the difference. But as I said, that's not also taking into account the effect of the debate to energize one's partisans to turn them out. Which, you know, is what is happening in those general elections. So I tend to fall on the side of the 1960 debate, less so of the TV radio, because, you know, we are in the televisual age in terms of this is how we do debates. I think there's some conflicting evidence in terms of those who was listening on radio and were they Nixon supporters, but still. From 60, as we've gone forward, we've seen instances of the debates having an effect on the dynamics of the election.
Is it fair to call them debates at all? Or it seems to me that more often than not, particularly this time around with all these people involved in the Republican debates, it's more theater.
Well, certainly. And you know, I don't get hung up on the words. I know I've dealt with some journalists who say, well, you know, I refuse to call them debate because there, for some individuals, there seems to be some true notion of a debate. Well, this is what our candidates do. They meet on the same stage. They address questions. Now, your idea of theater, much more so in these primary debates. Our general election debates have, you know, many people have criticized the debate commission for their very traditional approach to the staging of debates and their inability or unwillingness to add what I call bells and whistles. When I hear those criticisms, I sometimes point to what we see often in these primary debates. The last cycle was, I think, particularly egregious in the sense of audience participation, of video screens, of all sorts of lightning rounds, of you know, it was clear that many of those cable networks were intending to build large audiences, and they did, to the detriment, I think, sometimes of discussion of issues. So we do see that contrast from our primary debates to our general election debates.
I think back to, Ken, to 2008, I guess it was, when they had the famous YouTube debate, where basically it was kind of a funnel through YouTube, which brings to mind the fact that social media, I think, is here to stay. I think we can all agree on that. And it's being utilized by everybody, particularly young voters. And I wonder if televised debates really are something that the millennials generation even bothers to watch.
Well, most people still don't watch debates, of course, and that's one of the reasons there's a limited impact that debates can, you know, potentially have on vote choice. Social media will make a difference. I don't know the statistics on what percentage of people watch the debates by generation. I would imagine from all other research we've done, young people pay less attention to politics normally than older people. And younger people, of course, vote less as well normally. I would like to emphasize, though, that, you know, we're focusing on what is normally focused on, and that is that do debates make a difference, Don, in vote choice? It makes quite a bit of difference in primaries. It makes very little difference in general elections. However, if we look at the difference debates make, do they matter? Debates matter a lot in terms of informing voters, making them less cynical. Sometimes primaries, though, research has shown, have made voters more cynical because you watch primary debate, quotation marks, and people are turned off by what they see because sometimes they perceive the people as clowns or being too extreme in order to try to cater to the right wing or, let's say, even the left wing of their respective parties. But debates matter in terms of informing people, getting people engaged in the election process.
Anything to add to that, Mitchell?
Well, you know, I would point out, though, this notion of, you know, who watches and the reach of the debates. It's been amazing thus far in this primary cycle. We had 24, 25 million in the first Fox News primary debate. That dipped just 23, 24 million in the CNN debate. That's actually double the average primary debate viewership that we've had in previous cycles. Now, in a general election, we've had debates just as recently as the last presidential cycle, drawing 60 to 65 million viewers. We still claim, in terms of the following of these debates, they draw more viewers than any other single campaign moment. So there is an indication that the public is interested in terms of what's going on with this campaign. Now, whether they're well served or not, I do agree with Ken that our research shows that they come away, those viewers of debates, they learn about the candidates, they know more about the campaign issues, and they're more likely then to participate in terms of their electoral behavior to participate in the election. And so I think on all of those fronts, while debates certainly have their weaknesses in terms of are they true debates and we can critique the format and the questioners, I still come down on the side of the ledger. There's great benefits to these moments.
What do you make of the influence and the potential influence of social media this cycle?
Well, you noted, Don, just a bit ago, we are finding that there is some evidence that social media is drawing back in a younger audience to debate viewership. And certainly, I did an article with colleagues here at Missouri. We called it social watching, that the ability to engage your social network while watching the debate. Now, we're looking at some of the content of this social watching, say the tweets, the Facebook posts. The verdict is still out now in terms of, well, it's largely to express cynical thoughts. It's largely to ridicule candidates. It's largely – but still – we have found that those young citizens who are engaged in social watching of debates, they come away knowing more about politics while they are engaged in what, you know, some might say, well, the commentary that they are posting during the debate is perhaps not of the highest caliber. That's true. Again, I think this whole field of the intersection of social media and debates is still we're just at the beginning of trying to understand of what's going on there.
Ken, but do they vote? Young voters.
Well, no. I mean, they don't vote in great proportions. They did vote in a much greater rate in 2008, of course, with Obama being a rock star and turning on a lot of young voters. But normally they vote, you know, 33% of eligible young voters vote, and that's, the under 30 voter.
Well, we heard Robert Reich in the previous segment talking about this election cycle and about, the notion that we've got an awful lot of outsiders. The main contenders at this moment are outsiders. And I wonder how that comes into play in all of this.
Well, what does he mean by outsiders?
Not non-traditional candidates, Donald Trump, Carson.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Carly Fiorina.
Yeah, and that's rather surprising that you have Trump and Ben Carson leading the pack as outsiders. I think that shows, though, what Reich's point is, and that is people are getting pretty disgusted with the political system, and this is nothing to me but a rebellion of sorts against traditional politicians. I mean, the senators who are running, the governors or ex-governors who are running, I mean, these people are way down in the public opinion polls, and yet you have Trump an outsider and Fiorina an outsider, Carson an outsider, actually leading the Republican primary.
Right. Mitchell, I'd like to come to you on another part of this story. You were involved with the U.S. Commission on Presidential Debates, correct?
Yes, in 92, I was working with a research team where we were advising the commission, particularly on some of the issues surrounding the development of the town hall debate, which, of course, WashU has hosted, I think, a couple of the town hall debates.
Yeah, it has. This will be the sixth time next year when they have a presidential debate. What goes into that decision, deciding what city to bring a debate to or what institution to host it?
You know, the logistics are tremendous in terms of airport, hotel capacity. We sometimes refer to a general election debate as the Super Bowl of politics. It's where the nation, the world is focused at a particular evening on the campaign. And, of course, the national press in the thousands are there at the city, those in the debate hall, but then the 60 to 65 million that may be tuning in. There's so much that goes into that in terms of the capacity of the campus to host the media, to host all of the surrounding events that go into it. And then, of course, there's a large financial component. You know, our debates, they're not government-funded in any way. They're not funded by the campaigns. So there's a large financial component that goes into the bid that a host site will put into it. You know, that's why, as I look down the list, it's not surprising that the commission, to their credit, I think they try to locate these in educational institutions, college, university campuses, and to emphasize the educational component of this piece of our democracy of informing voters. But if you look down that list, you find a large number of private institutions that may have the capacity then to bring the debate to their campus.
Ken, in your mind, what does this debate to WashU mean for St. Louis?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that it's a good thing for St. Louis. I mean, it'll give a little boost to the economy, certainly not much. But I think image-wise, it places WashU in particular on the map. Let's face it, it's an enormous advertisement for WashU in the St. Louis area.
Yeah. We only have about a minute left. I just want to bring one other thing in. It's my little fun moment, if you will. We're talking about presidential debates and vice presidential debates and the influence they have on the election. Do you think Saturday Night Live has more of an influence on an election than a presidential debate? Ken, I'll start with you.
Well, Saturday Night Live certainly gets good ratings, and of course the
think Tina Fey and Sarah Palin.
Yeah, I think they have an influence. It seems like a lot of people watch him. A lot of people talk about the routines. Of course, Hillary Clinton was just appeared on Saturday Night Live, and it might help boost her ratings or image.
What do you think, Mitchell? In 30 seconds.
Don, you're actually absolutely right. The only time in the history of televised presidential debates that a VP debate had more viewers than the presidential top of the ticket was Sarah Palin and Joe Biden. And I argued that was driven entirely or largely by SNL, the skits of Sarah Palin, people tuning in to see how she would perform in that debate. So the intersection of entertainment media and the so-called real politics is certainly hand in glove.
Well, we've only got 13 months to go. We'll talk again, I'm sure. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Mitchell McKinney, thank you for being with us. Ken Warren, thank you so much for being with us, too.
My pleasure.
Good being with you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Syrian immigrants who have relocated and started businesses here in St. Louis. Then we'll take a look at the effect of the Illinois budget standoff on East St. Louis services and on that community. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.